Welcome to the second chapter. I'm your host, Kristen Duffy. Today, it's Tell a Friend Tuesday, or Wednesday or Thursday or whatever day it is. Today, I'm asking you to tell a friend about the second chapter podcast. And what a nice friend you are. The best part of hosting this podcast is the joy that I get from women with truly gorgeous, inspiring stories that I have the privilege of sharing with you. This week, I'm speaking with Kim Becker, who dreamed of a career in law, ended up with a career in beauty, and now, through her nonprofit organization, Hello Gorgeous, helps women with cancer smile when they look in the mirror.
We don't want to look sick. We don't want to look weak. We don't want people feeling sorry for us. Our tagline is, I restore the beauty that cancer steals. We restore the beauty that cancer steals. It really is about restoring normalcy.
Hello, Kim. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here. I love, love, love any chance I get to share my story. I'm excited to be here. So thank you.
Well, I feel a little bit sad because I was 100% convinced you were going to start with Hello, Gorgeous.
I should have. Wait, let's back it up. Hello, Gorgeous.
Thank you. Hello, Gorgeous. So nice to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about where we're from, but I have to tell you, I think that you are the third guest out of five so far this season that is from Indiana, and this is not intentional.
Oh my gosh, that's so weird. You wouldn't think that's an oddity to me. That's wild.
I tend to go back and forth. I've had quite a few guests, mostly US, UK, though there's been some Australians, there's been some Canadians. But this is definitely a very strange anomaly to have at least three so far this season from Indiana.
Right, from the same state. That's wild.
And of course, people that listen regularly have probably heard me say that I'm from Ohio. So in our world, we're basically next door neighbors.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Here in the UK, it would be a trip across the country, but for us, it's like nothing.
Yeah, no. Where I am, I'm sure it's probably a 4 or 5 hour drive, but it's not very far at all.
Yeah, exactly. I want to start from the beginning with you because you have a long career in beauty, but how did that happen? Where did it all come from?
My goal when I graduated from high school was I wanted to go to law school. And my mom always said I'd be a really good attorney because I was really good at arguing with her. So she was all for it. But, you know, back then, I graduated from high school in 1985. And so there weren't a lot of people that thought about, at least my parents didn't think about college planning and those kind of things. And so I had the opportunity to go to a private Catholic high school. And they basically said, if you want to go to college, especially law school, you're on your own. You got to figure it out. So my parents were both blue collar workers. They both worked two jobs very hard to make sure that my sisters and I had everything we needed. But at that point in time, they're like, look, you got to figure this out. So I'm like, okay. So at that point in time, I was working at a salon. It was a hair salon / tanning salon at a local mall. And I had gone in and told the girls that was my plan. And so they encouraged me to go to beauty school. They said, you could take a year before you headed to college and to law school and go to beauty school. And you could take your scissors and literally cut the hair of everybody in your dorm and pay for your way to go through college and law school. I'm like, oh my gosh, that I worked in a grocery store, but never had to work as a waitress or fast food restaurant. So that did not thrill me at all. I was not looking forward to doing that. But I thought, my gosh, to cut hair all the way through college, like I could do, that'd be easy. And I got into beauty school and that was it. I loved it. I love the transformation that took place. I loved, there was something that I could do for somebody else that they couldn't necessarily do for themselves. And so that was the best part of it. I still do it now, but my career in the salon spanned about 32 years that I was a hairdresser.
Well, I have two sisters who are hairdressers. One owns their own salon. One did own their own salon until a couple weeks ago when she decided to go back to hiring a chair. I've got a niece who's studying to be a hairdresser. So it is definitely something that's in my family. I'm very familiar with the love of transforming people, though I've never gotten the bug myself. Nobody's actually able to see me, fortunately, but you look gorgeous. I did not do a thing to get on this podcast.
Your haircut is kicking, though. It's awesome. It's perfect for your face shape. I love it. I love it.
When I was home, I have to say, shout out to Katya, my sister. She gave me a haircut when I was home.
She did a great job. It looks really good.
She'll have to listen to this episode.
Yes.
So 32 years of making people gorgeous, dare I say. But I know that you progressed through the ranks, eventually opened up your own salon. How long were you doing hair before you did that?
So my whole goal was, I wanted to open my own salon by the time I was 25. And just through a series of events, I wasn't able to do that. So I think I was 30 when I actually opened my own salon. So I was probably, I did hair 12 years because I was started when I was 18, right out of beauty school, or right out of high school, I went to beauty school. It was about that length of time. But I always knew I just didn't want to be a hairdresser. I always knew I wanted to be something more. And when I was working for a salon, I became an educator. And that's the great thing about being a hairdresser is that you don't just have to cut hair. There are all kinds of things that you can do, whether you want to work on a movie set doing hair and makeup, whether you want to work in theater and do hair and makeup, or whether you want to, I love to teach. I love educating people. And so these big companies were looking for educators, people that they could train on their system. And then they would send them out into the world basically and visit salons and then train the salons on their systems of their product. So I knew that I didn't want to be just a hairdresser. I didn't want that connotation that she just cuts hair. And when I got out of beauty school, I started working for a natural nail care company. And that's what I did was I basically went and traveled. It was called Jessica Cosmetics. They were based in Hollywood, California. So here I am, this 20-year-old kid. I wasn't even 21 and was literally like in Hollywood and went and trained. You know, they taught me their systems and trained. And they were sending me all over. Like I was in Canada. I was on the West Coast. I was traveling all over. And at that point in time, I wasn't married, didn't have a family. So I thought that's the time to be able to do that. I would go to hair shows and I would talk to people about the product at hair shows. And it was awesome. And I loved it. And then that came to an end. And then my favorite was I actually went to work for an Italian hair color company called Farmese. And I loved being able to work for that company. But the greatest thing was, so we do a summer training and they teach us all the trends that were going to come in the fall. Well, my clients loved it because I had all the trends before anybody else did, because right. I was the one that was out there teaching the trends. So I'd come back from whatever the 4 or 5 day training it would be, and I'd have all of these new hints and, you know, tricks, whether it was the brightest color that was out or the new technique that was out or the new cut that was coming out. And I could actually put that on my clients because they all wanted it. They wanted it before everybody else got it. And so again, it was one of those things, and that was very intense. It was like a 5 day training, and every night we were tested, and you had to pass all these tests, and then you had to do a video where you were actually educating, and then they decided whether it was up to you, whether you could actually become, you could go through all this training and not be certified to be one of their educators. But I was grateful that it was that intense because it stretched me as a person. But I also knew that when I walked away from that, I knew my stuff. So Farmese was more of a hair colorist's hair color. So you had to, if you wanted a red brown, you had to take the red and take the brown to mix the exact color that you wanted. It wasn't just that there was a red brown in a box. And so there was a lot of formulation and a lot of different things that you needed to know. But I loved that level of artistry. And so I really think that made me a better hairdresser. And I felt like I was better able to serve my clients and my salon guests because I had gone out and got all that education.
And you studied at the Vidal Sassoon College School?
I think it was school. Yeah. Setting at Vidal Sassoon in London was one of my big dreams. I felt like I had taken my education in the United States as far as I could. And that I wanted, something different that I could bring back that pedigree that would make me that much better of a hairdresser. And we loved it. My late husband came with me and we spent 8 days in London. And then we took the tunnel over to Paris. And we spent 5 days in Paris, and it was such an amazing experience. And I remember it was right at 2000. And so the Eiffel Tower in Paris had 2000 AD, and we kept gravitating to the Notre Dame. It was just such a beautiful cathedral. And we'd even done a night river cruise on the Seine and saw all the glass windows that were all lit up in the Notre Dame. And so it was awesome. But just even being in London, and the different techniques that they had and the way that they cut hair. Everybody uses scissors. Everybody picks up the hair. But the techniques that they used to move the hair was so different than anything that I experienced in the United States. And so to be able to take that and bring that back, but also to integrate it into what I was already doing was very cool.
Yeah, because you weren't confined to, I am a Vidal Sassoon hairstylist. I'm trained that way. So if you want something like this, but let me incorporate it with a little of this, plus this fabulous mix of hair color artistry. So at 30, you opened your own salon. And how long was that going on before you had this? I know you had a big epiphany, but how long were you doing your normal salon?
My son was born when I was 35. And we sold the salon when he was 4. So I think it was like 39. So just that rough span in there. So it was almost 10 years that we owned the salon. And it was great. And I loved it. You know, my favorite part when I realized was the teaching. So it was really great was all the education that I'd gotten as an educator in the nail business and all the education that I'd gotten as being an educator for Meezy. And then I studied at Hair Color USA in Miami and I studied at Pivot Point in Chicago and then Vidal Sassoon in London. So all those things I was able to bring together and then get these girls in out of beauty school and then teach them a lot of these different tips and tricks and techniques that I had learned from all those other places. And so that was my favorite, was to bring these girls out of beauty school and to train them, give them a solid foundation. I always said, and in my second career, which we'll get to, I always tell people, right, I give you a box. You've got to stay within the box. But what you do inside that box is completely up to you. And so it was the same thing with these girls that were just coming out of beauty school. I gave them the foundation, taught them what I thought were the four basic haircuts. But then they could move and combine these haircuts any way that they wanted to be able to create their own look where they got to use their own creativity to serve the clients that they served that sat in their chair.
After 10 years owning this salon and really being an educator, you still weren't feeling satisfied. I know you're traveling all over the United States. You're training people. You've been to London. What was this kind of, I don't know, I think a lot of us get it. I think that's why I probably have this podcast, because so many of us get this itch. But what was the sense of dissatisfaction for you?
An emptiness. There was just an emptiness that was in my soul that all these things didn't fill. Training the young girls coming into the salon didn't fill that. Working on myself didn't fill that. We remodeled the salon. And so every year, right after the first of the year, we would either add hair stations or add tanning beds or add an aesthetics area or a nail area. And all of the changes and the remodeling that we did still didn't fill that emptiness. Then we moved. We went from 1,000 square feet to 3,000 square feet in a salon. So we tripled our size. And by the time I sold the salon, we had 17 stylists. We had a massage therapist, receptionists, the whole nine yards. My favorite was the 3 o'clock afternoon buzz. So it seemed like 3 o'clock, all the chairs were full. Everybody had a client in the chair. And there was just this amazing energy that was throughout the salon that I loved. And you could just feel it. And it was awesome. But it still didn't let that emptiness, it never filled that emptiness that was there. It never went away.
And you were running the salon with your husband, Mike, at that point. Were you always working together?
So he graduated from Purdue University with a degree in pre-Columbian archaeology. Not quite sure what he thought he would do with that, but it was his. I didn't know him then. So it was something that fed him. He loved the archaeology piece. We did go to Cancun on our honeymoon. So he did get to visit many of the ruins that he had read about when he was in college. That was really cool. When our son was 13 months old, so Mike and I were 6 years apart. So I was 35 when I had Seth. He was 41. And Seth was about 14 months old. And the retailer that Mike was working for at the time did a huge downshift. And they let 1,900 managers go in a day. And he was one of them. 3 years after we got married, Mike was diagnosed with a liver disease. Very rare liver disease. Any football fans, it's the same disease that Walter Payton had. And they always told us it would never be the disease that would kill him. It would be an infection that the doctors couldn't get a hold of. But it was 20 years of a lot of different things. It was when he worked, he would get sick when he worked. But when he wasn't working, it seemed like he didn't get as sick. So when that downsizing came, we as a family decided he wasn't going to go back to work. He was just going to help me at the salon. Seth was about 14 months old at that point in time. So Mike would, you know, come in and do towels and he ran the desk for me for a while. And he was just there to support me, whatever it was that I needed until we went on to the next endeavor. And then he was a huge driving force behind that for a long time.
So the next endeavor is because of this emptiness.
Absolutely.
And what happened? I think you were in the car when you had some epiphany.
Yes. So when we opened the salon, Mike said, I have the perfect name for the salon. He said, we should call it Hello Gorgeous. And I said, that's the stupidest name I've ever heard. And he said, no, it'll be really great because every time you answer the phone, you get to say, hello, gorgeous, and it'll make people smile on the other end. I said, it's stupid. We're not doing it. And so we owned the salon, did all the things and felt this emptiness. And we were in the car on a ride back from Indianapolis, which is about 3 hours south of where we live. And we were having this conversation about how there's something that was missing. We knew that there was something more we should be doing, but we didn't know what it was. And all of the sudden it fell on my heart. And I looked at Mike and I said, I know what we need to do. We need to have a mobile day spa that caters to cancer patients. We need to have this beautiful, elegant palace on wheels that'll show up just a few feet from her door and treat her like a queen during a time where she doesn't feel very special. Now, any of your listeners that are business owners, they understand. People think that when you own a business, that you are filthy rich, that you take this great big wad of cash and you shove it in your pocket and you live this luxurious lifestyle. And that can't be further from the truth, because just about the time you get a little money saved up, the water heater would go out or the furnace would stop working or something or other would be due. But never felt like we could get caught up with things. And so I remember saying, I was telling Mike all these things and he's ready. He's ready to get out from underneath the salon. Whatever I decide to do, that's what he wants to do. And I'm telling him this big grandiose idea. And then I looked at him and I said, and we're going to do it for free. And right. I watched all the color run out of his face. And he looked at me and he goes, how are we going to do this? And I'm like, I don't know. I just know this is what we're supposed to do. So him being the amazing husband that he was, he stopped at a bookstore and bought me all the books he could find on grant writing for women, grant writing for dummies, free money for women, all the things. He gets back in the car and I'm processing this idea out loud and talking to him about it. And I swear I saw his ears slam shut. Like, he couldn't take this. He had no idea what was going on. So we got about 30 minutes from home. Our son was 3 years old at the time. He was sleeping in the backseat of the car. And we got about 30 miles from home and Seth woke up from his nap. And I said, why don't we get out, let the baby stretch his legs and stuff. Now, 10 years had lapsed from the time where he said the name of the salon to this moment in time. And as we're walking into this play area, I grabbed a hold of Mike's arm and I said, you know what, Mike, this is supposed to be called Hello Gorgeous. I said, the salon was never meant to be called Hello Gorgeous. This is supposed to be called Hello Gorgeous because that's how these women deserve to be greeted. And so he didn't want anything to do with it. It took him a really long time, like 6 or 8 months. Every time I'd bring the subject up, he'd change the subject because he didn't get it. He just didn't understand how we could do this. And I tried to explain to him, this is a calling from me. It's something that God asked me to do. There's absolutely positively no way. I'm a hairdresser. He has a degree from Purdue in pre-Columbia archaeology. As I said, God should have chosen 2 marketing majors from Harvard to do this, not us. Mike didn't understand like how this was going to happen and how all this was going to go down. And so he fought me on it for a long time. But man, once he got the bug, we both said, we have the best job in the whole world. And so much so, it'll be 5 years next month that I lost my husband. And I designed his headstone. And I actually have the Hello Gorgeous logo on his headstone. So that when people walk through the cemetery in a place where they don't normally smile, that hopefully they read that Hello Gorgeous and it gives them a little bit of a smile.
I can almost guarantee it would, because he was right to say it to begin with, to hear Hello Gorgeous when you kind of least expect it. Even just when you've written me an email and it says Hello Gorgeous at the top, my day just lifts a little bit because I'm like, somebody said Hello Gorgeous to me. And they're not looking at me. It doesn't matter. It's that we can all be gorgeous and we all have the right to feel gorgeous. And I love it. So why cancer? Was it something that there was any kind of a history, or is it really just, like I've called it, an epiphany that it was, yep, this is the person that needs this from me?
It really was. My explanation is that it was truly God that just said, I need you to do this. I need you to take care of the poor, take care of the widows, serve the sick. It's one way that I get to serve the sick. And I think that so many times what happens is that being a hairdresser, you have sisters that are hairdressers. It's all about beauty, right? We grow up, when we get married, we wanted to look like the princess. It's the hair, it's the makeup, the proms that we did and the formals and anything to feel like a princess, right? All of a sudden you get that cancer diagnosis and everything that makes you feel like a woman. Cancer treatment will take your hair. It takes your eyebrows. It takes your eyelashes. If it's breast cancer, it takes your breasts. And so I think it was what I saw in that. And to be very honest with you, I didn't see it in the beginning. I can't tell you the number of signs and different things that happened to us once this came on that was just confirmation after confirmation. And yet I felt so silly because I'm like, people have been diagnosed with cancer and my only way to be able to help them is, I'm so sorry that you were diagnosed with cancer. Let me paint your fingernails.
Well, I wondered, is that something that you have had naysayers that are like, these are people that are potentially terminally ill and you want to give them a new hairdo?
No, because what happens is these people feel helpless and they know that their loved one, that there's such an alteration that happens in their appearance that they're grasping at straws. Anything that you can do, anything that can help them, anything that can bring that smile back. And that's truly where the mission has evolved into. Is my goal is to make sure that a woman battling cancer can look at her reflection and smile when she looks in the mirror. That's what I want. And for everybody, it's different, right? For me, it's red lipstick. That's what I want to be able to do. I want to put my red lipstick. There's something about power in red lipstick. I want to put my red lipstick on.
There's
some women that it's big earrings. They maybe they want the bald head, but they just want the big earrings. We don't realize. I always say, I could rock bald. I could take my hair off and it would be okay. But it's when you lose your eyebrows and your eyelashes that you truly look sick. And women are so selfless and we're so empowered. We don't want to look sick. We don't want to look weak. We don't want people feeling sorry for us. And so what I say is that our tagline is, I restore the beauty that cancer steals. We restore the beauty that cancer steals. It really is about restoring normalcy. My big joke is that, like, when she gets a makeover, I want her to go out to lunch and I want the waitress to treat her badly. And I say that tongue in cheek, but if the waitress treats you badly, then she's not feeling pity for you. Shouldn't care because you look normal, right? That's what these women want. They just want to live their normal everyday life, whatever that looks like. Whether you're a Fortune 50 CEO, whether you're a working mom from home or just a dog mom, or maybe it's just that you're a great daughter, whatever that is, you want to go out in the real world and you don't want people to look at you like you look any different. You just want to look normal.
Yes. And as someone who doesn't, despite the two sisters, like I said, I've never really had the bug. So I love getting dressed up. But on a day-to-day basis, normal for me isn't a lot of makeup, isn't a lot of hair. But if the things that make me, like you said, I have a very specific haircut shape and I've always had very dark hair. Well, not always. I've experimented. But, you know, those are the things that make me. So I can understand that even if it isn't the red lipstick, though I love red lipsticks, it isn't shallow. And to me, you have a gift that is, like you said, educating and giving people beauty. So if that's what you have, you're doing your part that a lot of people aren't giving what they have to the world.
And you know what we found is so cool story. My mom had a procedure at a local hospital and I went in and I always pretty much have something on that says, hello, gorgeous. That day I happen to have a zip-up hoodie on. And the nurse that was taking care of my mom and said, oh, what is that? Now, this is in my local community. We've been around 16 years. And I said, you know, hello, gorgeous. We restore the beauty that cancer steals for women battling cancer, blah, 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 blah. And I started using this line. And so I said to this nurse, I said, you know, I truly feel that it's the doctor's job to treat her cancer. It's my job to make sure she looks really good while she's going through it. And the nurse is just sitting there nodding. And she looks at me and she goes, you have no idea how true that is. She said, we actually have a nurse that's battling breast cancer right now that asked her doctor to help her counteract the effects of her treatment. Because she didn't like what was happening to her appearance, he said, that's not my job. And so there has to be resources out there. I want to create the place where it's this amazing website with all of these resources that in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning when you can't sleep and you wonder how you're going to go to your son's soccer game or how are you going to show up to work next day or how are you just going to drive through the Starbucks line and feel like you. I want to be that place where all those resources are there so it brings you comfort. And you know what? I can do this. I can get through this. I can make this happen. This is going to be okay. It'll be okay.
So you chose cancer because of this epiphany, but you ended up with your own experience of cancer. How did that change how you were running the company, how you felt being the face of the company?
So I lost Mike June of 2017. And he was everything. He was my husband. He was my best friend. And he was my business partner. And that was tough. It was really difficult. I saw him every day. We worked together. And there's something to be said of having your person that would defend you. That person would tell me when I was full of crap, whatever that was. And so it was tough. Our son was just getting ready to start high school at the time. Mike passed away 2 months before Seth was getting ready to start. And so I had a two-pronged approach. It was to get my son through high school, to have a stellar high school career, and to make sure that I kept the organization up and going. That was my job. And we're trucking along, trying to find our new normal without Mike, all those things. And what had happened was, I didn't want to say I let my health go. You know, the normal things that you have done, I just didn't get done. I should have had a colonoscopy at 50. Instead of a colonoscopy, I became a widow at 50. And looking after me wasn't anything that I wanted to do. And so I thought we had this insurance company that came out and they offered like a free health screening. And they did something similar to a Cologuard, where you took a sample, sent it in, they checked it out and sent it back. So I did all of those things. I'm not on any medication. I don't have high blood pressure. I'm very healthy. I have nothing happening. I take my daily vitamins and that's it. And so I'm at the office and I remember it as clear as day. I'm walking in the big conference room area. My phone rings, number I wasn't familiar with, that's my cell phone's on everything. And the woman said, "Hey, Kim, this is the nurse from XYZ. And you sent in a sample and something came back positive and you need to have this checked out." I'm like, "Who is this again? I did what?" And she reiterated again and she's, "You really need to see your doctor." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." I hadn't been to the doctor, so I had to reestablish like the patient relationship with the doctor. So got into the doctor. I told her what it was. And she goes, "Yeah, I don't believe in those things." She said, "I'm sure it's nothing. Don't worry about it." I'm like, "Okay, that's fine. I'm not going to worry." She goes, "But you didn't have a colonoscopy at 50. We need to do a colonoscopy." Okay, fine. I go, I do all the prep. The prep's worse than the actual test itself. I wake up and they come in and they say, "We found something. We found a mass on your colon and you need to get this checked out." I don't know if it's who I am in the community or the severity of it, but I had a colonoscopy on Wednesday. I had a CAT scan on Thursday and I saw a surgeon on Friday. And 2 weeks later, they scheduled me for surgery. And you go on Google and I look at all the things and I had myself dead in 6 months. And so here's the kicker of it. They did a biopsy while they were in there and they had scheduled the surgery because no matter what it was, they knew they needed to get it out because of the where it was in my colon and stuff. But we didn't have a positive diagnosis. I was in the grocery store in the frozen food section when the doctor called me and said, "You have cancer."
Right.
And my world stopped right then and there. And I'm like, "Excuse me?" He said, "The pathology report came back and your tumor is malignant. And here's the thing. But if you had to have cancer, this is a really good one to get." It doesn't make it any easier. It doesn't. And all of a sudden, my world stopped. And all I could think of is, this is what this feels like. All of these women that heard those words before me and that I had helped, this is what this felt like. So I stopped, checked out. I was numb. I didn't tell anybody. My best friend was gone. And this was my biggest fear. My biggest fear was Mike was sick. He got diagnosed 3 years after we got married. So 21, 20 years, something like that. I took care of him. And that was my biggest fear, is what happens if something happens to me? Because I didn't have that spouse any longer. Who's going to take care of me? And then there was my child has one parent left. How do you tell your child that your only remaining parent now has cancer?
Yeah.
And so it's all the thing. You run through all of the emotions. You run through all of them. And it completely changed my world. But the really great thing was I was never alone. My youngest sister is 12 years younger than me. And we work together and I see her every day. And she's truly my best friend. Hard as it was for her as the baby, she went to every appointment with me. She was there during the surgery. She and her husband were wonderful after Mike died. They sat down and I just said, "We've got to tell Seth." I said, "But you know what? Let's just tell him a little bit at a time. Just only what he needs to know. They found something and I need to have surgery. Let's just go there." And then they didn't know exactly what was going to happen until afterwards. So thank God he was on my side. And all I had to have was surgery. Now, the surgery was invasive. It was I had a 6 to 8 inch scar. And they took out 14 inches of my colon and they took out 21 lymph nodes. And so 4 of the lymph nodes were affected, but they were just around the tumor. So I didn't have to go through chemo and I didn't have to go through radiation. I didn't have to go any of that stuff. And so I was very grateful. But I also want to share with you, after all this deep stuff, I'm sorry. But here's a really cool thing. So I want people to know, you need to be your own advocate, the first thing. You get to fight this battle any way that you want to fight this battle. So let me tell you, we're in the room. They're prepping me for surgery. We're in pre-op and you're only supposed to have 2 people in your room with you. I got 15. They're all circled around me and stuff. And the anesthesiologist came in and the surgeon came in and I said, "Look, this is what I want. You're going to put me out the way I want you to put me out." And I said, "When I lay down right before you, you know, put the mask on me and you send me out, I want to hear the Journey song, Don't Stop Believing. And I want the entire surgery room, I want the entire operating room singing that song. And when everybody's singing, then you can put me under." And so But the anesthesiologist was like, oh, okay. So he didn't say anything. Yeah. My friend worked in the hospital. And so she's there with me and she had Spotify. And so she, as they were wheeling me down, she had Don't Stop Believing playing. And so we get down to the room. And so the anesthesiologist, they put me on the operating table and he's like, look, you just heard Don't Stop Believing. I'm not playing that song yet. I said, okay. So we're going to find another Journey song. So they found another Journey song and they're playing it. They're, you know, bebopping around and they're getting me all ready and stuff. And they did like an epidural of some sort and they lay me back and they get me all done. And he's like, okay, here we go. They played Don't Stop Believing and they were all singing. And that's the last thing I remember until I woke up in recovery. And I tell people that story because it is when you're diagnosed, it's your battle. They don't make the rules, you do. And so if that's what brought me comfort, that was when Mike was alive, that was our family theme song, was Don't Stop Believing. And so that's what I wanted. I wanted more than anything. I wanted to know that I had very little control over anything. I couldn't control the incision. I couldn't control my breathing even during the surgery. I wanted to control what I could control. And that was the music when I went to sleep. That was the music that I wanted to hear.
Well, it's so interesting hearing you tell this story because my mom just had a cancer diagnosis not that long ago. Oh. And many things similar to you as far as it was one of the better cancers to get, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I look at somebody, you've just told them they have cancer and okay, it's one of the better ones to get. It's not really much consolation. It's yeah, but she did have a similar story to you where surgery was able to take care of it and she's doing quite well. However, she did not ask them to play Don't Stop Believing and she would have loved that. I wish she could have heard you here before her surgery because she would have been on board.
And like I said, it seems silly. I hope that it's an example to others that you get to, there are things that you have control over. You may not have control over everything, but there are things that you have control over. Nothing like hearing the entire operating room sing just a small town girl. And then all this, that's one of the last things I remember before they put me under. So yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool.
So you mentioned as part of all this that you've been running Hello Gorgeous for 16 years. Obviously, losing Mike was a huge challenge as part of it. What other kind of challenges have come along with this? Because like you said, being a business owner in general is hard enough. Here, you've been through losing your husband, you've been through cancer. What else? Because you've gotten it to be this thing. I mean, it's lasted 16 years, but it can't have all been gorgeous.
No. And I think that the difference is, and I try and explain to people that it's, when I owned a salon, maybe I didn't have as much control over it as to what I would have thought I would have had control. Money got a little tight. I could take an extra haircut. I could run a retail sale and I could call it Kim's in a bad mood. All the retail is 20% off. And so I had a way to generate income when we owned the salon. I could add a stylist. I could raise the prices. I had some control over that. That's the profit world. All of a sudden you switch to the nonprofit world. I can't reach into people's pockets and make them give me money. So I have to be compelling enough with my storytelling. I have to touch, move, and inspire them to the point where they see value and they see the effects, right, of what we do enough that they're like, we want to support you. And so I think that you get tired after a while because of the fact that you're relying on other people. And I think the biggest thing is it's relying on God. And that's what's so hard. If nothing else, this has increased and strengthened my faith. Because that's the only reason that I've gotten to the point that I am right now. And so those have been the trials and the tribulations. The story you don't know is that we did get the mobile day spa. We got the first one. We bought it with cash. It was kidnapped in 2013. They redid it, stripped it all the way down to the chassis, rebuilt the whole thing, ceiling, walls, floors, air conditioning. I have red corium countertops. Who doesn't want red corium countertops? It's awesome. It's beautiful. So they redid it, did a big reveal in front of 500 people. We did a makeover and did a reveal of her in front of 500 people. Then they revealed my bus. I had no idea what was doing. The outside of it is red like Elizabeth Arden's door. It was awesome. Then they roll in a second bus. They donated a second bus. And it was my dream. It was a $250,000 vehicle. It had four slide outs. It had granite countertops. It had ceramic tile floor. We had a stackable washer and dryer. Four flat screen TVs. It truly was the palace on wheels that I always wanted. It was absolutely amazing. And in April of 2017, 2 months before Mike died, I lost that bus to a fire.
Yes.
And then 2 months later, I lost Mike. And I thought, and I've written two books so far, and I want, and it's on my heart to write a third one. And in some fashion, I feel the name of that book should be Faith Under Fire, because my faith has constantly been challenged. Anybody that I talk to, I just tell them that there are times where all you can do is just put your next foot in front of the other one. That's all you can do. Because there are days when it's just, how are we going to make it? And then something happens, right? It's just this miracle. I decided at the beginning of May 2020, when COVID all hit right about that time, I have to get comfortable being uncomfortable. It's never going to be comfortable. No matter what happens, there's always going to be a bigger challenge. Life is to be experienced. I will tell you what, I don't know where I found the strength, but I found the strength to give Mike's eulogy when he died. And I'm so glad that I was able to do that, because there was so much. I obviously had a different perspective than anybody else because I lived with him day in and day out. And Mike would always say to me, I tell you what, Kimmer, when I die, he said, I want it to be that I am going sliding into home base with absolutely nothing left. And when I get there, I'm going to turn to God and say, that was awesome. And I want God to look at me and say, well done, good and faithful servant. That he literally used up everything that God gave him so that he could be the person and have the impact that he wanted to make. And there's no doubt in my mind that Mike got to hear those words.
So within the 16 years of running Hello Gorgeous, is there a story that stands out? I'm sure you have so many amazing stories, so many sad stories, but is there any particular story that you think about, maybe that keeps you going? Or
there have been so many, which I'm so grateful for, of all of the women that we've had the opportunity to touch and make an impact on, which is really great. The one in particular that I always like to remember back on, we've been able to do some pretty cool things, some pretty amazing things. Like, we've done a makeover at a baseball game. We've done a makeover at a polo match. And one of the makeovers that we got to do was at a Notre Dame basketball game. So we're like right in Notre Dame's backyard. And they have a Pink Zone game, which is all about breast cancer survivors. And so we had a film crew with us, and we actually kidnapped a woman out of the audience. It was all prearranged. We got out, read her nomination, took her into the girls' volleyball locker room, had a 90-minute window to do a makeover on her. When we got done with the makeover, we took her out to center court and revealed her in front of 10,000 people. And she was so cute. She had a dress on and boots. We got her a wig and she had a hat on. And you just watched her come alive. It was just incredible. She just came alive. And she took her hat off and did a twirl in the middle of the center court. And when we walked her off and got her back over into another area, and we said, what made you do that? What happened? And she said, there were people behind that didn't see me.
Oh, I loved it.
And so she was very cool. And she was such an amazing individual. She was diagnosed with breast cancer a second time. And when she was diagnosed that time, we were working on our second book called I Promise to Put My Lipstick On When I Get There. It's the red carpet guide to staying gorgeous through your cancer treatment. It's a what to expect when you're expecting, but for cancer patients. I felt like there were just so many things that women didn't know. If I could put them all in a book, then it was accessible to everybody, whether I gave you a makeover or not. And Mike had this dream, this vision, and he sketched it out. And I found the piece of paper the other day, but it was on graph paper. And basically, it was the image of a bald woman looking in the mirror. And when she saw her reflection, it was of herself completely normal. She had hair and her makeup was done and her eyebrows were drawn on. And he sketched that on this. He goes, that's what I want to be able to do. And so I contacted a photographer and said, we've got an idea for a book cover. Can you help us? She had a studio. She said, yes. And when Kendall, this was the same gal that we did the reveal in front of 10,000 people, through her second journey of cancer, I called her and I said, could you do us a favor? And she said, I'll do whatever you want me to do. And so we actually took her to that studio and made her up so that the photographer could put that book cover together. And that image is everywhere. It's for our salon affiliate program. The bus before it burned, that image was on the side of this 38-foot RV. So when you saw it rolling down the road, that's what you saw, was that image of that bald woman seeing her reflection in the mirror.
I was thinking that would be a good image for me to get from you since listeners can't see it, but it'd be great to have it to put on our social media so we could show what we're talking about, because I've seen the image several times, you know, as I've been looking at your website, and hopefully all the listeners will be looking at your website as well, but it'd be great to put that photo out.
Yes, I can send a copy of that to you. I'll email it to you.
So there are the two books, and then you also are doing a podcast as well. How long's that been going on?
3 years, actually. So I think we got 100, and they just told me 135, 136 episodes.
Yeah, I was very proud of you being my 59th.
You know what? I had to get to 59 too before I got to 130. So you're doing great. You're doing great.
Thank you. And this is Everything Beauty, Everything Cancer, some inspiration sprinkled in. So tell me about some of your guests.
The reason that I wanted to start a podcast on those is to tell the story. So our very first book is called Hello Gorgeous, A Journey of Faith, Love, and Hope. It talks about our story of faith. It talks about the stories of love, which are the women that we served. And then it talked about the story of hope, which is I have three sisters and I hope that I never had to use any of the knowledge that I gained on any of them, which I did, but that was the story of hope. But I remember Mike and I were laying in bed one night and I woke him up. It was probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And I said, Mike, I said, we have to write a book. And he said, do we have to do it right now? And I said, no, but we have to write a book. Now, luckily, his minor was in English in college. That was perfect. But I said, I get the opportunity to meet so many incredible, amazing women. And I said, if I don't write their stories, nobody's going to meet these women like I get to meet these women. Nobody's going to know their stories. And they're so inspiring. I mean, you can't imagine stories of women that are married. We had one woman that she had a set of twins. I think they were two. She was diagnosed with breast cancer. Her husband couldn't handle it, so he left. So now she's left with these twins and to battle this on her own. There was another gal that had three kids under the age of 5 and was like 25 years old. They had to have a double mastectomy. Again, the husband couldn't handle what was happening to her, and so he walked out. So here it is. She's got these three kids, but they do it, right? But these women do it, and they thrive. They don't just survive. They thrive. And so those are the stories. That's the inspiration, right? Those are the things that I want to tell. My podcast, I came away, I recorded my episodes on Monday, and I came away with such a feeling of gratitude. After I got done recording, I interviewed a woman who lost her nose to melanoma. They did an amputation on her nose. My second guest was probably my age, 55. Played D1 NCAA basketball, was a SWAT team negotiator, was all of these things, had a melanoma on the bottom of his heel, and has battled cancer for 10 years and had his leg amputated. But you know what? These two people are still smiling. They're still smiling and they're finding joy in a world that's not normal to them anymore. This is their new normal. And I walked away from that. I just remember I'm so grateful. I am so grateful for absolutely everything, that I have a roof over my head, that I have a car to drive, that my son and I did okay. You know, I keep saying we're still here, right? After all that we've been through, we're still here. I had such an amazing feeling of gratefulness. I just can't even explain it. And so that's what I want on my podcast, is to be able to, what you're going through, it may not be pleasant right now, but there are other things that are out there that could be a lot worse. So embrace the journey, whatever that journey looks like. I remember Mike was sick so much towards the end of his life, and I had stepped out from behind the chair. I hired a life coach because I thought, I don't know how to do this. The only thing I know how to do is cut hair and manage my book behind the chair. And so I hired a life coach, and I remember I spent hours. Why is this happening? Why are we going through this? And Mike was miserable. He got an infection after infection, and he was always in the hospital. And towards the end, he was airlifted to another hospital, and ambulance rides and all these things. And I'm like, here we are, we're trying to do something good. And yet every time I turn around, he's getting attacked. And all I kept saying was, I don't understand. I don't understand. And my life coach said to me, you need to stop asking why, and you need to start asking, what am I supposed to learn from this?
Yes.
Because in each one of these things, there's a lesson. And if you don't ask the right question, you're not going to learn the lesson. And so that's what I started to do, was ask that question, what am I supposed to learn from this?
You were talking so much about your faith, and I'm not particularly religious, but there is something, whether you have faith, whether you are religious, whether you believe in God, whatever those things are in your life, there is always something in a challenge to learn from. And it is interesting to look at it from that perspective, because it's easy to feel sorry for yourself. There's so many things, the scale of feeling sorry for yourself, the idea that people are living in horrible situations with war and everything right now. But you can't compare your own why and your own struggle, because when it's happening to you, it feels bad.
That's right.
But I always think that it's so interesting when people choose to face a challenge and learn from it, because there always is a lesson.
That's right. When I had a podcast guest, and I hung on to this, gosh, she was probably a guest about 8 or 9 months ago, and I've never forgotten this. He said, things don't happen to you, they happen for you. And so my late husband, he would say, like I said, his disease, I can't even go into all of it. I need to write a book just on his medical stuff. But for years, he lived with biliary catheters. He literally had tubes that went from the outside of his body into his inside of his body. He had open wounds on his stomach and on his side. We had bandages up all the time. And sometimes those were the sources of infection. And Mike would always say to me, I'm the luckiest guy walking. And he would say, I'm so grateful for this disease. And I'm looking at him, all the things that you've been through, how can you say that? And he said, because I look at the world through different eyes now. He said, had I not been diagnosed with this, I wouldn't look at the world the same way. Yeah. I look at the world in a completely different manner now because of this disease. And for that, I'm grateful. So things happen for us, not to us.
So I was going to ask you for a quote, but now I'm wondering if that's your quote, because that is a really good one.
It is. That's it. And one of my big, I guess it's not even a quote as much as it is a life motto. And that is that I've been given success. And so with those successes, I need to help others achieve success. It's not just about me. It's about passing it along. What can I use for my prior successes and my future successes that will help others achieve the success that they want to achieve?
And as you were saying before, sometimes just feeling normal when you're really undergoing a horrible medical situation is a huge level of success.
That's right. Even just being able to go to the grocery store and have the confidence to go to the grocery store and not worry that everybody's looking at you because you look different. I think that's a huge success. But the other thing is too, for us, it's even the ripple effect of the success, right? So I have the opportunity to reach a woman and to do a makeover on her. And because of the work that we did on her, she's smiling. Now all of a sudden, her husband sees her smiling, so he smiles. The kids see her smile, so they're smiling. She goes to work, she's smiling. That ripple effect goes out a little deeper. Now her coworkers are smiling. Her parents and siblings are smiling because she's smiling. So I don't even think that we realize like all the ripple effects of anything that we do. But when you do something positive for someone, all of those other things that come along with it, it's like the butterfly effect. You have no idea what that one random act of kindness, what that one smile will do, what that one thing will do, how that will positively impact not only that one person, but a bunch of other people going forward.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And to do the tiniest thing for somebody sometimes it means so much more to them than you'll ever know. I have to say that I've been very inspired by our conversation, and I loved hearing the story of Hello Gorgeous. Thank you so much, Kim, for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. As I said, I love the opportunity to be able to share the work that I do in the hopes that I get to inspire anybody else just to follow whatever that emptiness or that aching is in your heart. Don't give up on it. Even if it doesn't make any, people thought we were crazy to sell the salon and chase this dream and trailblaze where we're at. But I will tell you, I have the best job in the whole world and I wouldn't change a thing.
And I will definitely make sure that all of your information is in our show notes so that people can look at Hello Gorgeous and buy the books and listen to the podcast and everything else. And once again, thank you very much. Goodbye, gorgeous.
Goodbye, gorgeous.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, tell a friend, follow us on Instagram, and sign up for the Second Chapter newsletter. The Second Chapter is brought to you by Slackline Productions, a production company dedicated to redressing the balance of women's stories being told, and who's telling them, with a specific focus on women 35+. You can find us at thesecondchapterpodcast.com and slacklineproductions.co.uk. Thanks again.